Hello, this is just a quick heads up about this episode. This episode was recorded before the game week, and we just had the time to upload it now due to some health issues of mine. So I do apologize about any technical errors you might hear in this episode, or if the timeline doesn't really work out. But we just wanted to upload a podcast for you guys. Thank you and enjoy the episode. And we're back, everyone. This is Franco Premier League show with episode four. So episode five, I think. Episode five of season three. Sorry, it's been a bit of a while since we last uploaded, but I'm currently in recovery from a cold. So I apologize, but me and Martin discussed that. Just wanted to get something out for you guys. I'm joined by Martin today. Martin, how are you?
I'm good. Sorry for not posting for a while. I've been busy with schoolwork and stuff.
No, I think we all are, to be honest. It's been a tough couple of days عشان موضوع المدارس وكده, بس things are finally ممكن تستابلايز soon. I think since we last talked, we talked an international break, so it was after the third game week mark. So let's try to run down those last couple of game weeks. We don't necessarily have to go in depth in every single game, but so we can try to eyeball every single result, kinda, just because we haven't talked in a while. We can first start off with the Ødegaard dream debut, wasn't it?
I mean, I was expecting him to be starting as soon as he switched, but obviously Vieira probably wanted to give him some time to settle. Didn't want to put a lot of pressure on him. I think everyone can see that he offers a lot more than Benteke does,
Oh
or a
yeah,
lot more
much more.
than Batshuayi used to do, or a lot more than any other striker they had used to do. And I think with Zaha, with Affet, Eze, with some of the younger players coming in like Gallagher, Olise, I guess if he gets some minutes, I think they can provide them a lot of support and
When Ezzy comes back too.
And I think he looks like he's kind of made for the Prem. Unfortunately for him, after the two goals against Spurs, the next game against Liverpool, he missed a couple of good chances that could have kept Crystal Palace in the game. That happens, I guess. I don't think any Palace fan or even Patrick Vieira would be expecting to get any points from Anfield. But he's putting himself in good positions. He's
And Palace wasn't really bad at Anfield, where they النتيجة كانت خادعة شوية. They had chances and they did put the pressure on Liverpool. Yeah, they weren't like necessarily bad. It wasn't like a completely landslide victory.
mean, 3-0 is definitely not a good representation of how the game went, because Palace
Yes,
flickered early
very.
on. Liverpool got the first goal, and then Palace also put some pressure on. They could have equalized quite easily. So then they conceded the second, and then the third at the end of the game. It looks like an easy game for Liverpool, but it definitely wasn't, and wasn't as easy as it looks.
It was shocking from Tottenham, though. Though terrible display. I think even before the red card, this I think the red card was at the 60th minute, something like that. Yeah, Tanganga is a young lad and he's still learning, but it was a shocking display. Like they weren't good. I think they had only one shot the entire game and zero shots on target. And it was a scuffed shot by Son from 30 yards out, and it was on the ground. Falloa, they were not convincing at all. Emerson had a nightmare of a game. he was getting ripped apart by Wilfred Zaha.
I think they had a big problem transitioning with Skip, Winks, and Højbjerg. They found it very difficult to kind of transition from defense to attack. So surprisingly, Palace had a lot of the ball. Palace had a lot of the pressure. They couldn't get out of the forward press that Palace was putting on. And yeah, obviously before the red card, it was 0-0, but it's looking like Palace's game to win at that point. They were the only team creating chances.
The red card was 1-0, I think, wasn't it?
No, it was 0-0.
It was 0-0?
At the time, yeah. Oh, wow. First goal came in the 76th minute. And yeah, I guess unlucky with the penalty. And yeah, they kind of held on, I guess, for a clean sheet. They got a handball penalty, which was slightly unlucky, but I feel like the pressure would have eventually paid off and they would have conceded.
Yeah. They crumbled at Selhurst Park. Like,
yeah, Hamadi, it wasn't a good game all around. And I don't think any Spurs fan would have been upset or felt that the loss was undeserved, because I think anything other than a Palace win would have been
undeserved as well. Yeah, for Palace, they played their hearts out, to be fair. So let's go on to a game that was like much less traffic. I mean, finally Wolves got their goals. I read a mad stat today that they had, so far this season, they had 8.7 XG and only scored twice, and one of them was an own goal. And
from watching them, you can tell that they create so many opportunities and so many chances.
They're just not finishing.
Even the shots that are not registered technically on the stats, they create a lot of opportunities that don't end up with a shot or with a good shot, at least with a good opportunity. But Semedo's been getting so many chances. Traore and
Adama. Oh my God, Adama.
They've been getting pretty much at least one-on-one every game.
Adama Traore,
he's been playing on the left, which kind of made him a bit more dangerous, made him a bit more, closer to goal, because he cuts inside a lot. For now, it's showing a bit more how bad of a finisher he is, which was always the big problem in his game.
How bad of a crosser he is too. Did you see how many balls he tried to whip a ball to Daniel Podence?
Yeah,
it just rocked in the sky. Yeah, it just rocked in the sky.
Adama is always going to be a threat, regardless of whether he plays badly or good. Because of his pace and his strength, he's always, even if you know what he's doing, he's always going to provide some kind of threat. Sometimes it's frustrating, obviously, because he gets into positions with how quick he is and how strong he is. But he just doesn't have the finish. That's always been the big issue with his game. That's probably why he hasn't really got the move to a bigger club. Because there is no... there's no efficiency, so it's kind of tough to succeed in a big club where you don't get that many chances if you keep missing easy one-on-ones like he's been doing.
I don't want to flatter them too much, but I must say, like, Bruno Lage has drilled them well. He's done a great job so far in drilling them to convert them from a team that used to just sit back and play on the counter attacks to now a team that overwhelm their opposition with high press and second balls. It's honestly impressive. Like, I know results don't back that up, Len. I think they're on 4 points now. Three, come on.
Four losses.
Wow. And, yeah, so I know it looks doom and gloom, but... they look good. Like, they look good. They're just missing the finishing part. Like you said, I don't want to flatter them because results don't back that up. And at the end of the day, results are what matter. But the eye test, Wolves does not fail the eye test. I think they created the fourth most chances in the league. which is nuts.
They have been playing really well, and it's kind of sad to see. Obviously, transition is always going to be tough. They've been with Nuno Santo for, I think, 3 or 4 years, and he kind of made that team just by himself. He made the squad itself, got the players he wanted, the tactics, the defensive stability, the way they play. It was all based on Nuno Santo. It was always going to be tough for any other manager to come in and kind of put his mark on the team. But I feel like Bruno Lage has done well. I think you can definitely tell that they're missing a clinical finisher. I guess Raul Jimenez has been playing more as a target man.
Let's face it, he's not the same, man.
I mean, he's not the same, and it's tough to criticize him.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just, I don't get why you bought Fabio Silva for what was it, like 40 million, 45? And you can't even trust him with cup games. Like, how, like, it must be detrimental for him because he's a young lad too.
I think actually he did play the...
He started the cup tie. Oh, my bad. But, yeah, and got subbed at halftime. And so you'd rather play, let's face it, a half Raul Jimenez than trust Fabio Silva? It's just...
I think Jimenez has been playing quite well, but he's got that different role where he has to drop back.
Raul Jimenez.
Yeah, I mean that he's different because of the injury, and he's different because of the way that Bruno Lage is playing. I feel like a lot of the chances drop for Trincao or Podence Rogers playing on the wing along with Adama. Also, the fullbacks get a lot of chances. Semedo and Markel, they do get in a lot of positions. Like it's kind of a Leipzig system that they have.
Yes, very much so.
The fullbacks kind of push on a lot, and at some point they're going to be the furthest players on the pitch. But obviously with Semedo, not a very good finisher. He's more of a defensive fullback. I mean, he's got the pace, he's got the ability to get in the positions, but he's going to miss a lot of chances. Markel, same thing. And he's not the most attacking fullback. He got the touch that got the own goal, I guess.
Yes.
And he got the assist for the second goal. Both goals were coming from his side. So, and I watched quite a few of their games because I was interested to see how Bruno Lage is playing. And you can definitely tell that they're a very attacking team. They're a lot more attacking than the Wolves were used to. They're creating so many chances, but they're just, I guess unlucky or not clinical enough or whatever you want to call it. But if they don't get the goals eventually, all that attacking and a nice play is not going to matter. And I think they can't keep getting out of games with 0 points and good performance, because at some point that's not going to be enough.
Yeah, look at Blackpool. Like, what was it, 12 years ago? 10 years ago, they played magnificent football. I think they're the only team that's been that was over 40 points and still got relegated in the history of the league. But you're absolutely right. I don't think this is not a sustainable way, because all that matters at the end is how many balls you put in the back of the net, and if it's not much, then you won't last in this league. And I don't want to jump the gun, but if you don't find your finishing boots soon, you might be facing relegation here. Let's move on to the other. That was a great game to watch, to be honest. There was Brentford and Brighton. I think it was an early kickoff too, It was a great game to watch in terms of tactical wise, but there wasn't that many chances, to be fair. I won't lie, I didn't see the whole game. I only saw the highlights. But I think Danny Welbeck got subbed off. So I think he's going to play a good part this season. I think his movements suit the system very well. I think the role of Bissouma and Lallana acting as two ball carriers all the time is beneficial for Graham Potter's system. And I feel like also Kukureya has been a long overdue. They needed a left wing back for a while. I think he suits that system. What do you think?
He does, yeah. I mentioned before the season that I think they definitely needed the left wing back.
Yes, you did.
Definitely gonna add a lot of attacking part to their team because they've always been putting players out of position there. They don't really have a proper left wing back. And Kukurella, even though I guess he didn't get any like direct assists or goals or anything, but from the build up play and like he's comfortable with the ball, he's got some pace. He's got a good cross on him. He's even comfortable with shooting with both feet pretty much. Yeah, and he adds a lot of width, first of all, which they need, because they also play with the wing backs 3-5-2. He's often put in attacking positions. And he's more of an attacking fullback or wing back. So definitely suits the system. And Brighton in general, they've been playing well as they were last season. And I was always a big admirer of Potter and Brighton. But now, this season, they're getting the results as well. They're grinding the 1-0 wins. They're grinding the 90th minute winner like against Brentford.
It's always a good sign when you win games that you don't play well in. Because imagine if you're playing bad and you still get results, then imagine when you play good. I think.
they played well and Brentford played well. It was a very close game.
Yeah.
I feel like they both created some good chances, but it went either way. But that's the difference between the Brighton of the last 2 or 3 years and the Brighton of this year, and it shows on the table. They're fourth right now with 12 points, I believe. They got 4 wins out of the first 5. And they're collecting the points, and that's what matters. At some point, performances are not gonna get you the results. They're not gonna get you the points that you need to show for what you're doing or the project you have. Now they, I guess, yani, they're starting to be a bit more clinical, a bit more scary, I guess, for teams. Honestly, I respect it because I've always liked the system that Graham Potter had, and I'm happy for them that they're getting the results now.
So let's move on to Emirates Stadium. The one was Arsenal and Norwich, and I mean honestly, great reply from Arsenal squad. I think it was 1-0. I think it should have been a lot more. I think they had like 30 shots that game. Like Norwich couldn't hack him in any way, and the game was destined for an Arsenal win. I think it was a scuffed finish. It wasn't really that good of a goal, but it was definitely deserved 3 points. I feel like that's the reply Arsenal fans needed from Arteta and from Arsenal. Like, the pressure was very very high. Right after the third game week and throughout the entire international break, pressure was really high on Arteta.
Yeah, I agree. As you said, there was a lot of pressure coming into this game because Arsenal started, I think it's the worst start they've ever had, first 3 games. They were beaten quite convincingly, no goals scored. It was a lot of pressure on Arsenal, on the players, on Arteta. And ideally, yes, you would have, as an Arsenal fan, you would have wanted Arsenal to come in and win comfortably with 3-4 goals and kind of comfort the fans a bit. But I think the result was what mattered at the end of the day. They played quite well. Maybe the result doesn't show the full extent of the game. As they were actually quite decent, they created a lot of good opportunities. Defensively, they were pretty good as well. The odd mistake here or there, but definitely much better than the way they started.
For sure,
they needed that win, even though it's against Norwich. who don't have any points right now. But at the end of the day, you needed a win just for confidence and morale for the team.
They needed that, definitely. Top, let's go on to Ronaldo's first game. Second debut for Man United. I will leave the floor to you. So take it away.
Obviously, it was probably the most anticipated game. Ronaldo's comeback to the Prem, to United. And you can tell from the first half, he felt the pressure. Even someone as experienced and as seasoned as him, he felt the pressure. He was kind of making some plays that he wouldn't usually do. He didn't feel as confident as he usually is. That's kind of expected. You're coming back to a full Old Trafford. You're 36. There's a lot of doubts and a lot of expectations and a lot of mixed opinions about the transfer and about him as a player. And I know that with how determined he is, he always wants to prove himself. He wanted to prove that he can still play at a top level with United. He can still bring something to the team, even at 36 years old. His movement was pretty good in the first half. A few bad touches, a few bad passes, stuff like that. But that's to be expected. End of the first half, he gets the rebound of Greenwood's shot. And I think people, obviously it is a tap-in, but people don't look at the bigger picture of how he was the only player to move. As soon as he saw Greenwood even getting ready for that shot, he made sure to stay onside. He moved across the defender and in the place where if any rebound was going to happen, it was always going to be to him. And that's something he doesn't get enough credit for. I think people, he has obviously scored a fair few tap-ins in his time with the 700, 800, whatever, how many goals he got. But I think he is a very smart finisher. He's a very smart attacker in general. That's something that, for example, Thomas Muller gets a lot of credit for. But for players like Ronaldo, people kind of look at the bad side of it. He's getting easy goals. He's getting tap-ins. That's the only way he scores. And I think that's kind of unfair to say. Second goal was obviously kind of typical Ronaldo. The run across the defender, the good touch with his right foot, and then the low-driven shot with his left between the keeper's legs. It was kind of the Ronaldo that we've seen in the last 10 years. Scored a lot of his goals like that. And there were two very important goals. The goal to go ahead and Newcastle equalized after, and he got the go-ahead goal again 5 minutes after. Definitely his presence was felt. He made a big impact. And even with the team, the team as a whole was playing differently, because you can tell that when Ronaldo's there, you kind of need to step up your game. You need to adapt to Ronaldo's style. And he brought a lot of leadership and a lot of, I guess, demand out of the team. After the second goal, obviously kind of nervy, Newcastle could have equalized again, but Bruno with a really nice long shot, and then Lingard with another nice goal as well. And 4-1, I think, is a bit of a stretch for a result. I think the game was a lot closer than that. But at the end of the day, Ronaldo gets two debut goals. You win by three goals. I mean, I can't really... no one can really say anything about that. Just happy with how it went.
Honestly, I'm not going to lie. I was a bit surprised. I thought Ronaldo was going to be a lot more selfish in his play. And that's nothing bad. That's just how much of quality the guy has. But so I must say, he was a huge team player. He wasn't أنا كنت حاسس إن هو هيجي يونايتد يلعب زي ما كان بيلعب في البرتغال. وده مش عيب. He scored like what 115 goals with them. I'm not saying anything bad about him. But I thought he was gonna be more of a one man team show. But no, he was a team player. He pushed the play. He actually offered a lot in the scheme of tactics. He overloaded الميدفيلد and on the counter he was running making runs from deep. That's how much quality the guy has, that he's so deep in the back line. When there's a counter attack, he sprints all the way to the back of the pitch. And Old Trafford, nonetheless, one of the biggest pitches in England. So I must say I was surprised in that part. And I mean, two goals scored from him, and they were both deserved. It's not like, yeah, a tap in, but man, I support Chelsea. I have a striker that can't even score those. So, you must be.
Don't say that. Don't say that about Lukaku.
No, Lukaku. I'm talking about Vern. Any.
Lukaku eventually will miss a few of those. Don't.
Might. Yeah. لو جت على يمينه. So I don't understand who would criticize someone for scoring a tap in or a rebound a goal, and that doesn't make any sense. Blacks, the guy came in the fourth game week and he's chasing the golden boot already. So
yeah. I mean, that's just what you expect from Ronaldo. That's what he offers for anyone to
go. And apart from Ronaldo, I think you lot had a great game all around. Everyone offered something. Even Matic played well. Even Luke Shaw had a great game. Aaron Wan-Bissaka is the only one I'm iffy about, but he was covered really well by Varane. I think I told you this before, and it's a point we're gonna have to revisit. So I don't think in that new setup, Aaron Wan-Bissaka really suits that system. I must be honest. I think he's like one of your back fours that just feels misplaced or like an outcast in the system, depending on his capabilities. Because he doesn't move forward. He doesn't overroll. Sorry, he doesn't overload. He doesn't run the channels. He's a great defender, but that's not all it takes nowadays to be a great Premier League fullback. So I know you might disagree, but I feel like he's coming to a point where he feels a bit out of place now.
I think I do disagree to an extent. I understand the criticism because obviously, for how good defensively he is, he's not as good defensively. But I feel like that's because of how good he is defensively, tackling-wise, one-on-one. Pretty much impossible to get past. And if he was as good offensively, I think he'd probably be the best player in the world. But see, and it's difficult to expect someone to be so good defensively
on both
and
ends,
just as good offensively. I think he is definitely more of a defensive fullback. But people think he's not good going forward. And I think he is.
Just decision making. Yeah, I think his decision making is often the final third. Yeah,
I think in close spaces it's actually quite good. If you watch or if you watch him play a lot, he's good in getting out of tight spaces because
I loved him when he was at Crystal Palace. Like I'm not hating on him. I just feel like in this system that Solskjaer is playing, that high pressure counterattack, I don't want to lie. I don't feel like that system suits him to the best of his abilities, if that makes sense.
I get that. I get the criticism.
Yeah.
I understand the criticism. I understand where people are coming from because obviously you're not the only person who thinks that. A lot of even United fans think he's kind of an odd man out in the team. I slightly disagree. I think he is good. His problem is and will always be the middle third, the quick passes, the 1-2 passes. He doesn't have, he's not a very good passer of the ball and he doesn't put enough weight on the balls. And sometimes that causes a lot of problems because he is a defender. So if he doesn't put a proper pass, the ball gets intercepted, you're instantly in a bad position.
Especially the way you play too, and you play a lot on long balls through and down the channels. So
he is quite quick. I think he has a decent cross, but still not consistent enough. Obviously, compared to the likes of Cancelo or Trent or
these guys, they're the best in the league. So you can't compare with them.
Yeah, I think he's obviously a very different kind of defender. I guess you can compare him to a Kyle Walker more. He is quite similar in some aspects. He's got the pace. He's defensively sound. I think Wan-Bissaka is better defensively, as in one-on-one. And but Kyle Walker also has the pace to kind of recover even when he misses tackles. Kyle Walker is also renowned for being bad defensively, just running and making a lot of bad decisions, a lot of bad passes. I feel like there's a fair comparison there.
Yeah, I don't think Cancelo is good defensively either. I think it's passing ability, yeah, that makes him so special.
Yeah, Cancelo is more about the passing, the dribbling, the crossing. It's more of a trend kind of fullback.
Yes.
There are definitely different categories, and you can also always argue about what suits which team better, and you can always think that a more of an offensive fullback can be better for United. But I think it provides some balance, because you kind of need some defensive solidity, because we're not a team that controls games all the time. With Ronaldo now as well, he doesn't offer as much pressing as maybe Greenwood or Cavani or these guys. We're gonna be put under pressure quite a bit, and I think especially in the bigger games, even the last couple seasons, we were usually not the ones controlling the game, usually letting the other team keep possession, and we were pressing very late on in our half. The games against City, against Chelsea, even against Arsenal, I guess. You can tell them that we want to play counter-attacking. We don't want to press too high because we don't want to be caught out defensively. And with Varane, that might change, because he actually has some pace to recover and cover that. And we might be playing differently this season.
He's great at the ball with his feet, too.
Yeah, he obviously offers a lot more flexibility to how we play. So we have to wait and see. But I think Wan-Bissaka gets a lot of unwarranted stick that I don't think is deserved necessarily. But I understand the criticism.
I'm not giving him the criticism per se. I'm giving the manager a stick because he can't maximize the abilities of someone like Aaron Wan-Bissaka, because he's, let's face it, the guy is special. And he's, when he came to United, he was one of the tip hot young prospects in the league, and from Crystal Palace, and he didn't come for cheap. I blame the system that he plays in, because it's demanding stuff from him that he doesn't have to a full extent, or doesn't he does not have it. He has it, but it won't be as efficient as if you overload it on the other side with someone like Luke Shaw, who's great at all of those things, but maybe not as great defensively as someone like Aaron Wan-Bissaka.
I get that. I feel like it's a fair argument to make whether Bissaka fits the system or not. I think also one of the points that people often ignore is that usually our right wingers like to cut inside, like to kind of drive inwards. And we don't really use the right side as much. When Greenwood plays there, he's usually trying to always cut inside, take the shot, step over, stuff like that. He doesn't really use the overlap as much, even though it's actually often provided by Bissaka, the overlapping run. But it's usually ignored because of how Greenwood plays. When Sancho plays there, he also likes to kind of free roam around. He likes to go in the middle. Sometimes he goes to the left. That's also a point that I think should be kept in mind when talking about Wan-Bissaka's attacking contribution.
Yes. Tab, let's move on to a bit of a boring game, I must say, but we have to address it, because both teams are doing well so far defensively, better than we expected. Southampton and West Ham. طبعا انا صحت كميه صياح في الجروب كز I captained Antonio. Oh my god. طلع من نفوخي خازوق ايه. بس انا I want to give credit to حسن هو the guy lost okay let's count كده he lost Ings right he lost Vestergaard he's lost Ryan Bertrand so yet somehow some way he still defends well and it's not even just about defending or sitting back deep no he's actually playing good ball we're gonna talk about the City game بس he's لعيبة Southampton they play with no scares whatsoever they play with no fright مش خايفين من أي opposition بيلعبوا قدامهم بالذات ماتش سيتي ده هنتكلم عليه بعدين بس they're always on the second and third ball بالذات حد زي سوتشيك who's not really great on the ball حد زي كريك داوسن they overloaded that right hand side in Newcastle because not they're not really great ball carriers they kept pushing and pushing and pushing honestly I think Southampton almost scored right in one of the chances
scored in the 90th minute I think from a corner
yeah
it got cleared off the line by Rice and
yes
I mean,
yes
to give
yes.
them credit they already faced three of the kind of the hottest teams in the league United City and West Ham and they got three draws out of these games with two clean sheets and I think they definitely any exceeded expectations because before the season started and they lost Ings their best attacker Vestergaard I guess arguably their best defender and Bertrand pretty much their only left back
and
there's a lot of doubts
their
and
captain
a lot of
I think too هو وريال روميو حاكن so they're both captains in the team
yeah and there's a lot of doubts and people are kind of tipping them for relegation or this relegation battle and they only have 4 points I believe I don't think they got a win yet but at the same time I feel like they're kind of doing well like they had some really tough games to start the season Everton first game and then
you guys right
yeah United West Ham City and Brighton I believe or I can't remember but they had another draw in the middle but yeah they had some
Newcastle
was definitely not yeah the fixtures were definitely not favorable and now I guess they got some of the tougher teams out of the way they can focus on kind of getting some wins now against the mid-table teams, against the lower teams. And I feel like they surprised a lot of people, including me, with especially how defensively sound they've been.
And honestly, their first nine games were a nightmare, to be fair. I mean, I think they still have... They play Chelsea in 2 weeks and they play... Sorry, no, they play Chelsea next week. And they play Wolves on Sunday, and then they play Leeds right after. So their run I think has been the worst in the league so far. They had a really really tough run of fixtures. So the fact that they are at 4 points, with what four draws was it, and
yeah, four draws
one and a loss. It's honestly impressive with all the departures. I think Armstrong is playing so well. He's like the new Danny Ings, so to speak. He plays the same, يعني شبه Danny Ings out of his system. ده. I think they got Livramento from Chelsea, which gelled in right away, and now Kyle Walker-Peters is out of favor. They look and it's not even like they're just getting results خلاص. No, they actually play well. Is another thing that's so impressive. They play well, they give all they're all on the pitch, they're not scared of any team that they face. They play the same way in the exact same system. I think we might see another يعني, if everything goes well for Hasan Hüttl, we can see another Pochettino. Another Pochettino phase where he would eventually go to another team like Tottenham or a team like that or Arsenal. Or...
I mean, definitely there is potential there. maybe if he has a bit more of a settled team, a bit some more financial backing. I think he has a system that he likes to play with, and I think you can definitely, he's one of the managers, you can definitely see how he wants to play. Personnel sometimes let him down, and maybe his squad is not as strong, doesn't have enough quality as other teams around him. Messi, and if to be fair to him, at least he is getting the best out of what he has, and I think any Southampton fan would be satisfied with how the season has been going. And a lot of these draws could have even been turned into wins. I feel like they were very close games, even against the bigger teams like City, United, West Ham. A lot of these games could have definitely
won. They could have won both games, City and West Ham.
Yeah, and that's all the credit you need to give them, really. And if the team like that, if you look at the team sheets, there's a big, big gap in quality. A lot of unproven players there, and players who are kind of out of form or not. We haven't really been performing as well as they were expected to be, I guess. Taking all these players, Livramento is never played. I don't think he's ever played a Premier League game before coming to Southampton.
He's never played a professional game, Habib.
Maybe come in. So, and he's actually looked quite good. And I think there's talk about him becoming the right winger or the right mid with Walker Peters behind him.
Mm-hmm.
Has been very impressive. El Yunusi has been, I think he was loaned last season to Celtic, and he's kind of been a flop as a transfer since moving to Southampton. He's been actually getting some goals, he's been contributing. Che Adams and Armstrong, they've been playing quite well.
Even Broja, when they brought him on, he looked sharp as well.
Yeah, Broja actually looks quite good. I think there can be some good rotation between these three. They kept hold of Ward-Prowse, who looked like he was going to leave at some point.
They renewed his contract too.
Yeah, it was very important to them. They're definitely looking good, or definitely better than we expected at the start of the season, and after the first game.
Let's move on to Leicester and Man City. I don't know why a lot of people are giving City stick for that game. I actually thought City was pretty good the entirety of the game. I didn't think Leicester did well. They did well to hold them off, but I think that's just going to be a recurring problem that City faces week in, week out, which is finishing. They can't finish their dinner.
I mean, they don't have a striker, so
yeah,
it's to be expected, I guess. They created a lot of chances using pretty much the same move, the far post kind of ballona, the cross, that the really, really, really high cross with Mahrez coming in from the right side, or Jesus coming in, or Bernardo Silva. A lot of players just kind of drifting to the far post. They're getting a lot of chances using that. They're missing a lot of chances as well. Against Leicester, they missed so many chances, so many easy chances they could have scored. The goal was quite fortunate, the deflection of Soyuncu and then falling to Bernardo Silva. I think that's why people gave him stick. I don't think they played badly. I think they dominated the game. They definitely deserved the win. The way they got it was a bit fortunate, I guess.
So it was a deserved win nonetheless, to be honest.
Yeah, all that matters was they got the win, and I think the lack of I guess clinical striker was shown in that game and was shown in the game after against Southampton. But it's City at the end of the day. They're gonna create so many opportunities that they're gonna score eventually. Most games I wouldn't be too worried. I guess it hasn't been the best start for them. The draw against Southampton and they haven't really been as convincing as we expect from City.
I'm honestly not surprised. I think I told you this. I think that I'm still on my word. I think they're gonna finish third. I think it's because now everyone has an out and out striker except them. And yeah, all the quality that you have on the flanks and all the quality you have from behind midfield, all is great and all. But that's why striker position is the most expensive position in the sport, is because it's the most clinical one. That's the exact point of why you should invest in a striker. I mean, to be fair to them, they went all out for Harry Kane and they still couldn't get him. So it wasn't like it was their choice. But I mean, what we're saying, they could all go out for Haaland next year and win the treble, whatever again. So
hopefully they don't.
Hopefully not. Certainly have the money for it.
They have the money to buy anything, but
yeah.
Hopefully some other teams also have the money, because I don't really want to see Haaland in the Prem unless it's with United, to be honest. It's going to be a nightmare for all the other 19 teams that are going to be in the Prem. So hopefully, because City with Haaland is honestly going to be kind of unfair.
it's tough to imagine, isn't it?
Let's just hope and pray.
Yeah, we can only hope. I'm gonna go to the other game, Chelsea and Aston Villa. Nightmare start for Saul Niguez. I think that's like one of the worst Premier League debuts I've ever seen. To be fair to him, yes, it will take some time to adjust to the speed of the league and the intensity of the league, but I mean, Tuchel is ruthless as ever. Now he makes changes at halftime now.
Yeah, I mean,
these days, right?
It's one of these games where the score doesn't really reflect how the game went, because I thought Aston Villa actually quite good.
They were very good.
Chelsea scored the early goal, which took a lot of pressure off them, because I think they were under a lot of pressure for the rest of the first half. Aston Villa created a few good chances. I think they should have scored at least one of them. Second half starts, stupid mistake from Mings, and then they give Chelsea a second goal. And now it's a very difficult game to come back into. Even though they still played well after that, they still created chances. They could have gotten a goal to make it 2-1 and then could have really went for the game. But again, couldn't score, couldn't finish their chances. And then last minute goal for Lukaku makes it 3-0, which looks like one of these games is just a routine home win for Chelsea. But I think it could have went a lot worse for Chelsea.
Thiago Silva had a goal line clearance, and Mendy had a line save. And to be fair, what was his name? I'm trying to remember. He was the new guy. Jacob Ramsey, I think. Yeah, he had a fantastic game.
He was pretty good, yeah. And McGinn as well. I thought they were both really good.
McGinn was so good as well. I think Saul Niguez had less passes. Yeah, I think he had more missed passes than passes completed that game.
Yeah, yeah, there was definitely a game to forget for Saul, and I think he is a very good player. He's got the quality, but he hasn't been as involved in the Atletico team the last couple of years, and I feel like it shows in how he played that game. It's kind of still rusty, so not used to the tempo. And it was going to be a transition for him from the La Liga to the Prem with the quicker tempo and stuff. But for a player who hasn't even been playing regularly in La Liga, to come in, go back to playing regularly on a high level in a new league, it was always going to be tough for him. And I think he will come good eventually. He just needs some time. If Chelsea can afford to give him that time, I think he'll be okay.
Lukaku.
Yeah, he's been good.
Yeah, Lukaku's Lukaku, ain't it?
He's been scoring. He's been doing he's been doing well so far. I think there's definitely, if you're a Chelsea fan, there's a lot to look forward to. And I think a lot of people have them as the favorites to win the league this season.
You don't.
It's Lukaku. Right.
You still have City.
I expect the City to win the league. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lukaku's problem is, and we kind of saw it against Spurs, I guess, to an extent.
Yes. Yes.
The bigger games, it doesn't really show as much. And when he goes on a bad streak, it really shows. The confidence goes down. If he goes a couple or three, four games without scoring, it will really show on his confidence, on his all-around play. I think it did mature. He's not the same player as he was in United, obviously. He looks more confident. He looks more assured of himself. He looks more patient, more composed. And these were all things that were big issues for him back in the Prem.
I think the main issue with Lukaku is I heard someone say this, and he's like a big baby. He wants to feel affection and loved all the time, like and I feel like that's what was tough at United, is that when he came to United, he was expected to be khalas, that goal scorer who's gonna score God knows how many goals a season. And when that didn't happen, because United's fan standards is so high, and rightfully so, you guys were serial winners for a long time. I think that criticism got to him, and that's why in Inter that he felt the best he's ever felt, because he worked on himself completely to
I think his move to Serie A was definitely an ego boost for him, because
yes,
his strength really showed the difference in strength. When he went to the Serie A, he can definitely handle any defender, can be a really good target man. And in the Prem, especially with United and just before Serie A move, even with Everton, he was a really bad target man. And it was very, very strange to see from someone as big as him and as strong as him. When he gets the ball with the defender at his back, he would usually lose possession. And that was one of the bigger frustrations with Lukaku at United, is that he was a very kind of poacher in the box kind of player. He didn't offer good build-up. He didn't offer not necessarily, I guess, sometimes he would offer some runs in behind, some runs in the flank, but he would get dispossessed quite easily. For someone his size, it was very frustrating to see from the fans. But he definitely worked on that now, and he knows how to kind of get the ball, receive the ball with a defender right on him, and just get rid of it right away. Because he just needs to be a station, get rid of it, give it to someone who can be creative. You don't have to turn, you don't have to do anything special. Just get the ball, receive the ball with the defender on right on you, give it to someone else, and then make the run to the box, and then you'll get the service eventually. Obviously, with how good Chelsea have been and how well drilled they have been under Tuchel, they know how to play when Lukaku gives them the ball, and yes, you have three or four players overlapping. They know how to move the ball so that they can get an opportunity out of it, and then eventually Lukaku can come in and get the goal. With United at the time, it was obviously not as drilled as Chelsea are. It was a bit kind of random at times. So you can definitely see the problems. It's just not a good fit, United and Lukaku. And it was never about Lukaku not being a good player, not having enough quality. It was just about not fitting in what the manager expected and what the fans expected. And I'm happy for him. Like, I have no problems with him. I love to see him succeed. I wanted him to succeed at Inter, and he did. I want him to succeed at Chelsea, but still, obviously, not against United, or not, inshallah, said United. But he got his move. It was good for him. It was good for United. It was good for Inter. It was good for everyone involved. He adapted his play style. He changed. He matured. He improved. And now he's back in the Prem, and he obviously looks like, he's kind of wanting to prove himself again that he can. He's not a Premier League flop. He's not just a Serie A kind of player.
Keep in mind, we can't say on a guy that scored, 107 or 115 goals in the Premier League that he's bad. We can't, right? Because that was just make us look like idiots. Definitely, Lukaku definitely has some flaws in his game, and it shows. Like, I'm not going to lie about this.
I think with Everton, he was much more of a clinical finisher. And that was also one of the points of criticism at United, because he was missing a lot of easy chances. So it adds to the frustration. And it was obviously a mixture of low confidence, of this kind of the pressure getting to him at some point. But so now he looks very comfortable. He looks comfortable with the squad, with the players around him. It looks like they have good chemistry. They have a good understanding between them. But it's definitely good to see from a Chelsea point of view. I think they're definitely there, Yanni. There's a lot of excitement there and a lot of things to be excited about. I think there will come some period of time where he will kind of not go on a dry spell, not get the goals, miss a couple of easy chances. But luckily for him, because of how good of a start he had, I think people cut him some slack, and it won't affect him as much as it used to with United before.
And I think Chelsea fans really want him to succeed too, because of like how much he loves the club, how much he loves Chelsea, because he idolizes Didier. I think it's emotional for Chelsea fans, I do think. They will, yani, if there's any fan base that will give him time on a dry spell, it will be the Chelsea fan base. Although Chelsea is known for their cutthroat approach. I think that he will be given time if a dry streak happens, and it happens to every striker, let's just face it, especially in the modern game. But here's the thing, and then that's the point I was trying to get to. Lukaku definitely has flaws in his game, but how much do these flaws matter in Tuchel's system? That's what's going to decide. That's going to be the decisive factor. Because Chelsea won the Champions League without a striker last season. So they're definitely capable of... yes, they missed a ton of chances last season. Let's just face that. But now they're not creating nowhere near as many. So it's the question.
You can tell that Tuchel kind of adapted his system a bit to allow Lukaku, or to get the best out of Lukaku. He's obviously a very different striker to Werner, or even to Havertz if he plays there, or whoever plays there. He offers a different kind of strong point. And... I feel like Tuchel actually is getting the best out of him while getting the best out of the team in general as well. It's allowing the fullbacks to kind of overlap a lot because of how deep Lukaku has to go sometimes. And now you're seeing Reece James getting a lot of chances, Alonso getting a lot of chances. But it's allowing, it's different, but it's still very good.
It's telling, yes, exactly. Top, Let's go on to the last couple matches of this game week, and we can try to predict tomorrow's and this game week's result. What did you make of Liverpool's start so far, and what did you make of Everton's?
Liverpool, they've been doing quite well.
It's almost perfect, isn't it?
Yeah, I think they only dropped 2 points against Chelsea.
Yeah.
But all around, I think they've been playing well. I think the results are kind of misleading, because I feel like they're getting wins by bigger margins, but a lot of the games are closer than the results say.
Yeah. I don't think... Yeah, I think against Leeds, they played very well. So I think against Crystal Palace, they didn't like. They didn't necessarily play a 3-0 performance, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and I think against Leeds, the game could have went in a completely different way. The first 15 minutes, Leeds had two really good chances. The one I remember very well was the Rodrigo chance, where he definitely should have scored. It was, I think, in the 12th, 13th minute. And if that goes in, I think the game becomes really tough on Liverpool, away to Leeds. Obviously, any team is gonna be in this position. Arsenal had made a really good save, and then they went on. They scored pretty much 3-4 minutes after, and then from then on, it was always gonna be Liverpool game to lose, because Leeds are already in kind of a tough position. They're not getting the results that they need. Teams under a lot of pressure. They haven't been performing to the standards that people expected them to after last season. With no confidence, with very, very, very sloppy defending. After the first goal, they conceded a lot of opportunities, a lot of chances. Melia had a decent amount of saves, I think, that game. And they kind of kept them in it. He kind of kept them in it until the second goal, the Fabinho goal, which was what kind of it was a weird goal, I guess, from a, like to see in a big game like that, to concede a goal when I think it was a set piece or a corner, and then it kind of dropped, had a couple of deflections, and then it got to Fabinho in the 6-yard box or something like that. From what I remember, it was very sloppy defending from Leeds, and you just can't afford to do that really against Liverpool. And then the red card and the Elliot injury.
Oh man, what horrifying scene!
Yeah, I mean, it was sad to watch him to watch that develop, because even though it's Liverpool and they're kind of United's direct rivals. I
got a feel for Elliot. Yeah, Elliot has had a magnificent start this season.
And he's still really young. He's only 18, I believe.
Yeah.
To be getting this kind of backing from club in a team like Liverpool, they're supposed to be challenging for the title, or they're expected to be challenging for the title. And to be playing week in, week out against some of the tougher teams, against Chelsea, and to be depended on as much, I think it was a really good opportunity for him to kind of put his name out there as the next Foden or the next Greenwood or the next English talent to be coming out. He's Bellingham at this point.
He's Welsh, isn't he?
I think he's English.
Harvey Elliott? He is English?
Yeah, he is English. Nick Williams is Welsh, I think.
Oh.
To be in that next player that a lot of people are talking about, a lot of people are impressed with how composed and how controlled he is in the midfield, especially that it's not his main position. I was kind of excited for him to watch him play. Player at such young age doing well is always a good thing to see, even if it's for Liverpool. But it was obviously devastating to see him suffer such a long-term injury. It was kind of unlucky, I guess, with the tackle.
It was a freak accident, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was... the tackle was not the best tackle, but I don't think it was... I don't even think the tackle was too out of control. I think it's just with the turf and
Ellen Road's pitch is the worst in the league.
Yeah, it was just unlucky for him really. Hoping he recovers well. And I think he already underwent the surgery. Hopefully he can play again this season. I think there is hope of him playing in this season.
Yeah, I think they said 4 or 5 months. So.
Yeah, so
we can only hope. I mean, he had a fantastic start, and it's just sad to see him. It's just such a freak accident too, and I mean, I I got a feel for Stroik too, because I think we've had a discussion about this too. Was it really a red card type of challenge? Letting how Makancha Ozdoy hurt him, and I, like you said, I don't think the tackle was like a really really violent one. I think it was just a freakish accident.
But I think it wasn't a red card challenge. But yeah. As often as is the case with these kind of challenges that result in really kind of gruesome injuries, they usually follow the red card just because of the intensity of the injury more than the intensity of the tackle. And I understand that it's not really, and that wasn't really the biggest issue for any Liverpool fan or for any Liverpool supporter, because they didn't care about the red card, they cared more about the injury.
Yeah.
But for me as a neutral, or just talking, analyzing the game after, I think the red card wasn't the right decision. And I think a lot of people actually agree. I think even a lot of Liverpool fans agree that it wasn't supposed to be a red card. I mean, at that, it didn't really change the game dramatically, so it's okay. But it, obviously, the injury was the biggest
turning point. Yeah. How did you think Everton's start went so far? And we'll go to next week's game week.
Everton, it's been weird with Everton. I feel like
I think Everton will be fine, but it will be awfully dull. It will not be good to watch from.
I believe like they've been getting some results. They've been getting the wins. They've been racking some.
And
wins.
Honestly, I think that's what Everton needs.
I think that's kind of what you expect from Benitez coming in. He's not gonna be the most fun to watch. It's not gonna be the most entertaining. But he's gonna grind out some results. He's gonna grind out some wins, however ugly or beautiful it has to be. It's just the result is what matters to him. And now they're kind of in a tough position because they don't have PCL and Richarlison. They haven't to depend on Rondon and Thompson and Gray, who are actually doing quite well, except for the last game against Villa. But Thompson and Gray have had really good starts to the season.
The whole team had a day off that day.
Yeah, that's true. So it's going to be tough from now because I think Richarlison still has a couple of weeks, maybe 2 or 3 weeks. I think DCL still has around 3 or 4 weeks. We'll see how it goes from here. They might be going on a bit of a dry spell after the last after the loss they received against Villa. They're lucky that they don't have the toughest of fixtures. I think they have Norwich next.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then
tomorrow. Yeah. Tomorrow they have Norwich.
Yeah. Norwich, West Ham, Watford, the next three games. So. Yanni, I would expect them to drop some points, even against Norwich and Watford. I'm expecting them to kind of, have a bit of a bad spot.
Watford has been only back. It has only been bad at the back, but they have been good going forward.
I think it has definitely been very dependent on Ismaïla Sarr.
Yeah, heavily.
And he's obviously the best player, and he offers a lot, especially in counter attacks with his pace, with his stamina. Quite impressive, actually, because he's very quick, and he's got a very quick to, from the get go, very high acceleration. And he's also, stamina wise, he's also really good because he can keep it up for the whole game, which is quite impressive in itself. So even with the gap in quality between Watford and the teams they're facing, just him by himself can probably change some games and get them some points. I was surprised that they kept hold of him when they went down. I think it's paying off for them now.
We've talked about this before.
And they definitely has the capability to keep them up again. But it's gonna be tough, obviously, because it's never any. He can only do so much. At some point, it's not gonna be enough. Yeah, Bassani, they've been doing okay so far. I think they got 6 points, if I remember correctly. Yeah, 2 wins and 3 losses, which is not bad, really. Looking at how Norwich have been doing, how other teams around them have been doing, I think they're doing pretty well. Yeah, but they're gonna have to at least get points from the teams around them. They're gonna need to win the games against the teams below them to have any chance of staying up or being in a kind of a say not being involved in a relegation battle at the end of the season.
Yeah, I don't think Watford is staying up, bro, to be honest. And it will be very tough for them because I think they have a bad run of fixtures coming up. I think they're facing United and Chelsea, and it does not look good for them. Especially I think Bachmann is injured too, and they're playing with Ben Foster. They're very quality mismatched by other teams. Feel like them and Norwich are like kind of obvious. It will be the third team that will take a while to figure out.
Yeah. It will be tough for them, but you never know, Yanni. It's
still the fifth game week. Yeah, this is Edri, anyways.
So. It might not come down to how good or bad they are. It might come down to if they're better than the other teams around them, even if they are not necessarily good. But other teams can just be worse, and that can be enough for them.
Let's look at tomorrow's fixtures and predict. Tabana, you won't watch this game because you'll be occupied with the other game. But Chelsea
I'll
City.
You'll watch both of them. Chelsea City. Stamford Bridge, correct?
Yes.
It's going to be a good game to watch, to be honest.
Yes, very good game. Here's the thing. I don't think it will be good on the eye. Because I feel like it will be a great tactical game.
It will be actually quite enjoyable, even for
Newcastle. Really?
I think there will be a lot of opportunities. Because even with how well Chelsea have been defensively or how well they've been defending,
something's going to fall out, yeah.
I mean, Man City are always going to create opportunities at some point. Well, not always. They always have. Sometimes they have a game where they're just not there. But I feel like they'll be up for it tomorrow. I feel like Chelsea, this is kind of the game that if they win, people are going to start thinking of them more seriously as a title contender,
mm-hmm.
Because they would have already faced Liverpool, Spurs, and City.
They have an easy run of fixtures coming up after this game. I think from like 7 to 13, it's much easier than this.
Yeah, they did have a tough run of fixtures in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
But they've done really well to kind of get the points. As a prediction, I'm going to say 1-1.
1-1. I'll say 2-1, Chelsea.
Respect.
Yeah.
Backing up your team.
Finally. United and Villa.
I'm going to say 3-1 United.
3-1 United. It's tough because this could go either way. I'll say 3-2 United.
I haven't been that good defensively, so even I'm not depending on a clean sheet.
With Aston Villa, I think it can go either way. My United, I will say 3-2 United. I think United can will just edge this. What about
We've been conceding a lot of goals, so understandable.
Yeah, and Villa is great going forward, but they're still not stabled in the back. They're still not stable. What about Leicester Burnley? King Pow.
Leicester Burnley. I'm gonna say 2-0 Leicester.
I'll say 2-1. I think Leicester has been leaking goals a lot. What about Everton Norwich?
I'm gonna say 1-1. Norwich got their first points.
Yeah, good. I'll say 1-0 Everton. I don't think Benitez is the type of manager that scores a lot of goals. I think once he gets one or two goals, he's happy. What about Leeds and West Ham? That'll be a good game.
It will be. I'll say 1-1 as well.
1-1. Leeds is without Bamford, and I think I read online that they're only with 13 senior players going into this game. I'm gonna say 1-2. I'll say West Ham winning this one. West Ham 2-1.
They've always had a problem with the bench. They've always had a really weak bench. Leeds.
They're like one or two injuries away from a catastrophe. And I think they're without Robin Koch too.
Yeah, he's been out since the start of the season, I think.
Yeah, and I think Klich is questionable.
And Strike is suspended.
And Strike is suspended, yeah. So I don't even know what second center back they're going to play with.
It's going to have to be Ayling and Cooper, I guess.
Yeah. How about Watford, Newcastle, Vicarage Road? I think that would be a good game.
It's a really important game for both teams. I'm going to say Newcastle 2-1.
Exactly the same. Newcastle 2-1. Brentford, Liverpool. Unity Stadium.
I think this would be a tough game for Liverpool.
You think so?
I think it'll be tougher than anticipated. I think it'll be 1-0 Liverpool.
I'd say 2-1 Liverpool. I think Ivan Toney can score something, or Mbeumo can snatch something.
They've got a couple opportunities.
Yeah, they're really good at cracking codes for big teams, Sharifli. How about Southampton and Wolves, St. Mary?
A lot of close games this week.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say Wolves 1-0.
Oh, you think so? Be first win for
I think
for
so. Who?
Or no, they already got a win, didn't they?
No, I don't think. Oh, yeah, they did get a win, yeah. They got one win.
Yeah.
Southampton haven't gotten a win yet.
Yeah, Southampton haven't gotten a win. I'm going to back up Southampton on this one. I think Wolves will find their shooting boots after the second international break. I think they're just not there yet. So I'm going to say 1-0 Southampton. North London Derby at Emirates. I think this is a really important game for both teams.
Yeah, for Arteta specifically. I feel as this one is going to be tough for him. I'll say 1-1.
See, I think Arsenal struggles against teams that that defend well. I think they're getting Tanganga back, aren't they? And Son is back. Dele is back, or Dele has been playing. Kane is back. And Ndombele is in good
form. He can't really tell from how he's been playing.
Yeah, he hasn't been really good, but I mean, I think he's the North London Derby's top goal scorer now.
He does like scoring against Arsenal.
But it's at Emirates, and Arsenal fans would do anything but not to lose a home game to Spurs. I'm gonna say no. I think it's gonna be a dull game. Spurs do know how to defend. They don't create many chances. Arsenal create a lot of chances, but they're not really good quality chances. I think they're perfectly matched.
A very, very ballsy prediction. Two clean sheets. I don't think it will happen. I don't think any clean sheets are going to happen that game.
I don't know. I don't see any of them scoring, really. Yeah, I'm going to stick with no.
I think Spurs are more likely to win. I'll give the... I'm predicting a draw just for the home advantage.
Just kind of the fans are back, yeah, for North London Derby, first North London Derby since 2019. Crystal Palace Brighton. I don't know why this is a Monday night football game, but I think it's we digress.
I mean, I don't know why they have Chelsea City and Man United Aston Villa at the same time. I mean, the most annoying thing. Especially with
this doesn't make sense, and this is the game they choose for Monday night. they're both good teams, and this will be a good game.
That's because it's Champions League midweek, so they have to cram all the Champions League teams on Saturday.
كان ممكن يعملوا إيفرتون ونوريتش ده أو
Yeah, they could have definitely done a lot of things. At least made the one of the Chelsea City or
North
United.
London Dark. North London Dark. I mean, Spurs doesn't play till Thursday. So it's time. We digress. Palace Brighton. This will be a Selhurst Park.
I think this would be quite a good game as well.
Me too.
Let's say 2-2.
Yeah, I was gonna say the same thing, but then I don't know, because here's the thing: both teams are currently on a good form defensively too. So
Palace just conceded 3.
Yeah. They did. To be fair, but against Liverpool. And two, like one of which was a free goal by Naby Keita, and the other one was a rebound.
They did defend okay. That's the only.
Yeah.
I feel like they're definitely susceptible to conceding the odd stupid goal.
Brighton struggles away, usually speaking. So I'm gonna say 2-1 Palace.
It's a brief prediction.
Yeah, I'm gonna say 2-1 Palace. I think Palace is on the come up. I mean, here's the thing: when you look at Brighton's goals, it's a lot of them are penalties, two of which came from Duffy, who's their center back. That's gonna dry out eventually. فهمني مش حاسس إن ده sustainable way.
Finding ways to score. I mean,
They're finding ways to score. They're grinding out results. So I feel like Crystal Palace has something special cooking up. So I'll give them the benefit of the doubt and say 2-1, just because it's also a Selhurst Park. It's also on Monday night. They're probably going to be a packed stadium. Everyone cussing and booing Brighton. Brighton is a hated team. So I'm going to stick with Palace's prediction. It's going to be 2 wins from 3 games. I think we haven't seen that ever in the Premier League for Palace.
They have really gone a good run.
Yeah, it's usually like one-off games. They would get like 3 points. All right, this is a good place to end it here. Martin, I want to thank you so much for coming on. I know you've been crazy busy with school.
Thank you for having me.
Again, man, thank you. And guys, it's been a great episode. Thank you for all your support. If you have any questions or concerns, address us on Twitter. I'll put the links in the description. And have yourself
any ideas about like different subjects if people have ideas, you can throw them at us.
Yes, absolutely. Any suggestions, comments, concerns, anything, just shoot us a tweet or a DM. All of our DMs are open. All of our feeds are public. You can tweet us, you can text us, anything. Thank you so much and have a great rest of your night.